Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East. The very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.
Gamarjoba, and welcome to the History of Saakashvili, Georgia. I'm your host, Roberto, and this is episode 42, Cloak and Dagger. In today's episode, we will see what happens when the Roman generals and the Lazi king, Gubaz II, come to full-blown arguments and no longer want to deal with one another. I want to thank my Patreon members who have been amazing as always with their continued support. This show could not run without you, so you're all getting a shout-out now, thanks to Audrey Neeson, Andrew Schneider, Mitchell Dutt, Eric Nicholson, Gerard Eliasser, Holly Kuntz, Ari Tena, Quinn Campagna, David Montgomery, Konstantina Megrelishvili, and Ashley Fisher. You are all amazing, and I value each and every one of you. Now, for a special message, because I want to mention that I will be at the Intelligent Speech Online Conference on February 8th, presenting on the formation of the Tbilisi metro system and participating in two roundtables, one on the myths surrounding Catherine the Great and another one on Russian propaganda in general. If you'd like a 10% discount for a ticket, please use the code ZAR, spelled T-Z-A-R. Now, let's get into today's episode. In our last episode, we looked at the ways that the now deceased Persian commander, Mir Mirwe, attempted to break into the Telephys region of Georgia, using an intense amount of cunning and deceit, which led the Roman armies to repeatedly retreat to safety further and further west. These land gains proved to be boons to the Persians, who were now looking to establish their hold within the region and take over the remaining parts, which led towards the coastline. Of course, the death of Mir Mirwe greatly distressed the Shahanshah, Khosrow I. He didn't want to lose the gains that his erstwhile general had given his life for, and lose the army that was stationed there due to a major lapse in leadership. So, Khosrow appointed a new general to head his armies, a noble named Nachoragan. Unfortunately for our Persian ruler, but fortunate for the Lazi and their Roman allies, Nachoragan would take quite a while to get to the Kutaisi region. Back in the Roman camp, the Lazi king Gubaz II was filled to the brim with rage at the way that the Romans had been leading the war. They, as the more powerful nation, which compared to Lazica, thought that their opinion was what mattered, and they ignored the natives of the land. Great idea. From King Gubazes II's observation, though, they have mucked up the last few battles and caused the Lazi to cede more and more territory to the Persians. His allies were a disgrace, and Gubaz knew what he had to do. The Lazi king pulled out his most powerful weapon against the idiotic Roman commanders, which was his ink and quill. And with that, he wrote a very strongly worded letter about them to the Roman emperor, Justinian. In this letter, he outlined their complete incompetence, their failure to keep forts, their continued losses in battle, and worst of all, running away from the enemy without even stopping to fight. He further wrote that he did not know how Justinian could trust these men to even win a war when they could not be bothered to fight, especially as they just continuously drained the resources of his land. To prove his point, King Gubazes II names the leaders of the Roman army in Lazica, Bessus, as the main culprit, alongside other perpetrators being Martinus, a fellow general, and Rusticus, Justinian's purse bearer, who merely paid the soldiers for distinguishing themselves on the battlefield. Unfortunately, Rusticus had managed to gain more power within the army, as he had access to confidential reports that assisted in the military decisions, and his opinion, despite not being a general, carried weight when he voiced it, even if it was contrary to reason or the best course of action. See, the thing is, General Bessus should have been on Justinian's good side. He had captured the fort of Petra and demolished it, while also attempting to secure all the approaches into Lazica from Kartli, which would have impeded the Persians from breaking through. It's quite obvious, though, that his ineptitude had allowed the Persians to break into the land, and he instead preferred to enrich himself by stealing further goods and taxes from the Lazi cities around him. This news, as well as King Gubaz's letter, would put the final nail in the coffin for Bessus, and Justinian would confiscate the general's property, relieve him of command, and send him north to the Abascoid territory, at least until Justinian could decide what to properly do with him. However, Justinian did not remove all the culprits, and instead made Martinus the new chief commander of the Roman army in Lazica. This move would further strain relations between Gubaz and Martinus, as Rusticus was now sowing discord between the two men, especially as the threat of King Gubaz II loomed over these two Romans, which, you know, could be the end of their career in the army if he blamed them for any more losses in the region. To be honest, it would be their fault, since they are the commanders of the Roman army. Well, the military command broke into two factions, that of the Lazi and King Gubaz, and that of Martinus and Rusticus. The king could obviously feel the hostility coming from his two supposed ally commanders, but would do nothing to cool it down. Instead, he grabbed that fan and just fanned those flames. And when speaking about the commanders, he would say the absolute worst things about them, portraying them frequently as men who talked a big game about being able to fight and beat someone up on a battlefield, but when it came to the main event, they would show their true colors as a cowardly braggart and run away as fast as possible. Worst of all, he would even tell these stories during official receptions and in the presence of ambassadors from neighboring countries. See, here's the thing. King Gubaz wasn't wrong about any of this. They have proven themselves that way time and time again, but there should have at least been some diplomacy on his part. Obviously, Martinus and Rusticus did not take this mistreatment of their personas, no matter how well-deserved we think it was, since they were still Romans, and there was no way that this barbarian Lazi king could treat them this way. They were probably thinking about the way Gubaz held that anvil over their heads, and he could report them at any moment he wished, in case he found something that they did unacceptable. They didn't know what to do, at least until John, Rusticus' brother, joined them for a meeting. Together, they came up with a plan, and that was to speak to Justinian and report that the king had been collaborating with the Persians behind the emperor's back, and then ask him what he should do with them in that regard. And so, John went off to talk with the emperor. On arriving in Constantinople and being granted a meeting with the emperor, John accused Gubaz of defecting back to the Persians and of immediately giving away their stratagems, and of course being the leading cause of Roman losses in the land. John furthered the point by explaining that if they did not have permission to stop the king quickly, Lazica would entirely be lost to the Persians. This news surprised Justinian, who did not want to believe that King Gubaz, after detailing the reasons why Mbessas had been messing up the war for them, would want to so quickly switch sides. Justinian was not that big of a fool, and of course was not entirely convinced of this situation. He asked John to bring Gubaz II to him, so that the king could defend himself against these charges, especially since he was an ally and deserved to be listened to. John gulped, not thinking that the emperor would have asked for Gubaz to be brought before him. If Gubaz came to meet with Justinian, the ruse would be entirely broken, and the plan would stop dead in its tracks. Thinking quickly on his feet, John then asked the emperor what he should do if Gubaz would not come with them willingly to Constantinople. Justinian answered that Gubaz must be made to see reason, especially since this was an order from Constantinople. If Gubaz continued to offer resistance in coming to the city, then he must suffer the fate of a rebel and perish. Justinian then reiterated, quite loudly, that this was only to happen if he did not come willingly after being asked multiple times. This was all that John needed to hear. According to John, he had just been granted permission to murder King Gubaz II for being a traitor. So he had returned back to Lazica, and he told his compatriots Martinus and Rusticus the events of what occurred, as well as Justinian's command to bring in the king. The trio looked at each other and smiled knowingly.
In his final days, Alexander the Great's generals asked him who should succeed him. Alexander's answer, the strongest. Taken literally, this would see the close of the classical Greek age, an age thousands of years in the making. Join me, Mark Selleck, as I go back to retell the story of ancient Greece in my series Casting Through Ancient Greece. We will cast our way back to its beginnings, all the way through to the spread of its culture throughout the known world, thanks to Alexander and his generals. You can listen and subscribe to the series at www.castingthroughancientgreece.com, or you can listen on your favourite podcasting platform. Don't forget to follow the series over on Twitter at Casting Greece or on Facebook at Casting Through Ancient Greece. I look forward to seeing you there.
Hello and bonjour. My name is Josh Zucker, and I want to take you on a journey through some of the most exciting events of the late Middle Ages. Valois-Burgundy was one of the medieval world's greatest what-ifs. Its dukes inherited, conquered, and politicked their way into forging a state between the German Empire and the Kingdom of France that rivaled them both. From the Hundred Years' War to the Holy Roman Empire, from urban workers to Joan of Arc, and from gallant knights to gunpowder weapons, the Grand Dukes of the West had a part to play in almost all of Western Europe's biggest developments in the 14th and 15th centuries. If you want to learn more about the glamorous rise and dramatic fall of the Dukes of Burgundy, please join me for Grand Dukes of the West, A History of Valois-Burgundy.
We then skip over to the autumn of 555, and Martinus and Rusticus summoned two soldiers, Justin and Buzus, and told them to find King Gubaz as soon as possible, since they wanted to plan a concerted attack on the Persians at Onoguris. Justin and Buzus agreed, obviously not knowing the commander's true reasons for meeting with the king, and fetched him. Gubaz received word ahead of time that the generals were planning to meet with him, and would arrive at any moment, so he went on a leisurely stroll atop his horse alongside the Chobis River with a small retinue of guards, since he did not believe that his allies had nefarious reasons to meet, since they were the commanding officers of the army, and while they disagreed, and possibly even hated each other, they had a common goal, which was to get the Persians to hell out. After being brought by Justin and Buzes, King Gubaz met up with Martinus, Rusticus, and John, and they rode along the embankment, discussing the situation at Onoguris, learning about how many men were there, figures, and more, and what the best course of action would be to take the fort. King Gubaz actively reminded the men that Onoguris was in the middle of Lazai territory, and the Persians had a horrible disadvantage against defending against the Romans, since they had stretched themselves too thin to take it. If the Romans lost this easy-to-win battle, the Persians would then be able to take control of the surrounding region. At some point during the talks, Gubaz looked at Martinus and Rusticus, his anger visible at the Roman commanders who made him lose his land to the enemy, and said, "But, my dear fellows, it is up to you and to you alone to bear the brunt of the present fighting, since you are solely to blame for what has happened. If you had not been guilty of gross carelessness and neglect of duty, no hostile base would ever have been built to confront you. Neither would you have turned tail and borne the stigma of dishonorable flight, nor would any of the other undesirable consequences have ensued. So, my fine fellows, you must now make good your omissions if you profess to be enamored of glory, and if you delight in the exalted name of general. For you may rest assured that I will not throw in my lot with you until all your errors have been rectified." Gubaz's harsh words made Rusticus and Martinus stop dead in their tracks. Despite the actions that they had taken to start planning the siege of Onogutis, King Gubaz II had just said that he'd provide no support to them until they reclaimed the land that they had lost due to their fleeing from battle. John, who was Rusticus' brother, took this as the descent needed to prove his allegiance to the Persians. John silently drew his blade and struck Gubaz in the chest. Gubaz was immediately knocked off his horse, but did not perish. He was more so surprised at the attack. He crawled away from the group in pain and attempted to get back onto his horse to ride off, but one of Rusticus' bodyguards came up from behind and struck Gubaz on the head with his sword, only following the instructions given by his superior commander moments before. Justin and Buzus, the two men who had brought the king to meet with Martinus, Rusticus, and John, had witnessed the whole ordeal. Unfortunately for King Gubaz, they would keep silent about the whole thing, thinking that their commanders were acting on the express order of their emperor, no matter how much they disagreed with what had just happened. When the commanders returned, the murdered body of King Gubaz II in tow, the Lazi grew despondent and refused to assist the Romans in any way, either in a civil or military capacity. The Lazi buried King Gubaz II within their own cultural rites. The Persians thought this was the best time to grab the Lazi to their side, but the Lazi refused to just get involved, not assisting anyone, and the death of King Gubaz gave them a huge blow to their prestige. So let us end this episode with what Agathias says about the matter. Quote, "The Lazi are a great and proud people, and they rule over other very considerable peoples. They pride themselves on their connection with the ancient name of the Colchians, and have an exaggeratedly, though perhaps understandably, high opinion of themselves. Nor are they barbarians in any other respect, long association with the Romans having led them to adopt a civilized and law-abiding style of life, so that, discounting the bulls with brazen feet, the harvest of the sown men, and all the other fabulous and incredible creations of the poetic imagination that have been elaborated around the figure of Aedes, one cannot fail to find that conditions now are very much better than they were in the past. Being the sort of people I have described, then, the Lazi had every reason for feeling that they had suffered an intolerable injury in being arbitrarily deprived of their king." End quote. To connect with us, feel free to find us on social media under @history_Georgia or on Facebook @TheHistoryOfSacredVilleGeorgia. Our intro music is Binisperia Sopeli by Zadashe, and our website is czarpower.com. I am working to get that to also be the history of Georgia something something or the other.com. Not that exact one, but I'm working on getting more websites on one. You can find things for the history of Sacramento, Georgia on the same website. But overall, to help this podcast continue, please feel free to subscribe to our Patreon or donate via Ko-fi or PayPal. The links are in the episode description, and if you'd prefer to donate something a bit more tangible, we have an Amazon wish list for you to peruse, and we also have Fourth Wall. You can get an ad-free stream there for just a $3 payment, too. But the best way to help us is via a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast host, as it goes a long way with getting the word out about the show and helping us reach new people to learn about Georgia. Madlaba da nakvambis, and thank you for listening to The History of Sacredville, Georgia. See you next time.
Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East, the very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the oldest stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history, and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conqueror's Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.